Welcome to Collector's Corner, the premier digital art platform.
We help collectors gain and maintain their edge, all while appreciating beautiful art.
Let's jump in.
I thought maybe we would start with the... I know this wasn't on the docket, but I feel like we should talk about the Moonbirds acquisition a little bit. It seems like it's big news, especially with them being an art-focused community.
Can't plan for content, and then they lob a softball for it.
Yeah, but I'm curious. Like, do you think? So, full disclosure, Jared and I were talking about this like an hour ago, but I want to bring it up again. Like, do you think that with Moonbirds being an art adjacent, I would say art focused community, that will be maintained over at Yuga, or shut down, or perhaps even enhanced? Like, do you have any predictions?
So here? My prediction is the sentiment can't get much worse. So I think that there's blue skies ahead for the community. I did briefly hop on a Spaces in between some calls earlier, and it seemed like, I can't remember who from Yuga, but it felt like somebody who's like higher up, like, was really complimentary to the art aspect of the Moonbird, and was actually alluded to the fact that, like, Yuga would be able to enhance the art aspect based on, like, the connections that they have developed within the marketplace. So it was, like, enough of a tickle to, like, to get me intrigued. And I will say, full disclosure, I not only hold a proof pass since day one, I do still hold one of my Moonbirds that I was gifted for free. So, you know, I am invested in the ecosystem, and I do have like an interest in propagating some hopium. But it was also evident to me in that Spaces that they don't have a plan, meaning like they're going to kind of have status quo. And I think that at least not a plan that they're willing to admit to publicly yet, but he did allude to a lot of like marketing and like publicity materials coming out. So I think it's gonna be a little bit of like a grab your popcorn moment and wait over the coming weeks.
Yeah, super interesting. And you know, I think it's good, honestly. Why not combine forces? And really, really interested to see how much they lean into the art side and how they do that. And you know, it's not like Yuga hasn't been in the art side before. I mean, I know that they had a real artist make all of the Bored Ape art and mutants and all that, probably multiple real artists, but there's that. And they had their Ordinals release, which, you know, maybe wasn't everybody's favorite art, but it was art. It was not a PFP. It's kind of interesting.
What I will say that, again, I always like to take info and aggregate it from like these like unadjacent communities. You know, I'm a little bit more open with you for some of the communities I talk to, but one of the things that piqued my interest when this Yuga individual was speaking is he talked about like big plans for Meebits. And, you know, in one of the adjacent communities, you know who it is that I talk to weekly, like they were mentioning, you know, the undervalued nature of Meebits. So I feel, again, maybe it's a little bit of hopium, but I feel like Yuga is starting to get, you know, these acquisitions aligned, and they're going to start putting a plan together to roll out a bigger picture. I mean, again, there was so much Meebits discussion and all these like kind of unadjacent areas that like, it's kind of got me FOMOing a little bit of potentially wanting to at least have some little bit of exposure. And I say that not to like try to like pump Meebits by any stretch. If anything, it's kind of been like the redhead stepchild of like the Larva Labs ecosystem. But the reality for me is, if these somewhat, you know, unaffiliated communities are all talking about it and they're well connected, and then Yuga comes out today and says like, you know, we're going to be committed to it and we're going to leverage our relationships for, you know, the art community. You know, I don't know what happens, but I, you know, out of just the sheer, you know, grace that I want to give to the space. Like, you know what? Good for them. Like, we could either sit here and complain about, like, what, you know, Proof and Caro have done, or at least, you know, like, try to support Yuga and some enthusiasm that hopefully they'll be bringing to the system. And that's what's got me excited right now. It's just the, you know, as long as everybody has hope, you know, we got something to hold on to. So I'm holding on to that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, look, this is better than Proof, you know, slowly losing attention and shutting down in a year. Like, for sure, this is better than that. I think so, at least. And I know that's not the only outcome. They could have, like, turned it around. So obviously that would be, like, the best for the Proof holders and the Moonbirds holders. But, you know, barring that, this is certainly better than fading into oblivion. So I think that's great. I really, you know, I'm hopeful. So we saw Gordon Gonner buy a bunch of art and tweet about it, what, a month or two ago. And I don't think he's technically on the Yuga team anymore, but he seems like he's really was almost the face of it. I don't know if they had a CEO per se, but he seemed to be like the point person, like the figurehead, if you will. And now Yuga is talking about art. Like, it's just really interesting to see that art is being infused into this culture from like a very early stage, the NFT culture. And actually that's probably a great segue into our title here, Pebbles, Rocks, and the Rise of Web3 Institutions. You know, wanted to recap some of the few things that happened in the week. And then this question of like, who should we be trying to impress in the Web3 art world? That's what I wanted to bring up. But maybe we should kick it off with Pebbles. I know it didn't come out this week, came out the week before, but it felt like there was more conversation about it. So for folks who are listening who don't know, 6529 Memes, they came up with their very first long-form generative art release as a meme by ZE Blocks, which is made up of Arsenic and I can't remember their name off the top of my head. I apologize. I'll look it up here in a second. But I had heard of Arsenic. I had not heard of this other person before. They go by Cheater Flums. I'm not sure what that means. But anyways, so they've actually done an Artbox curated before, and they released Pebbles. And allow list for 6529 Memes holders, 0.0, 6529 Mint. Let's call it, I don't know, what that is, about $150 or so. Rocketed it up. I think it got up to like a 3 ether floor, 1,000-piece collection, now settling in the high ones, 1.8 or so. But there's a lot of questions to like, well, why? Why is this one doing so well? You know, part of it is certainly, I think, the 6529 community. I also think that they actually did long-form gen art really, really well. And I think that is part of the story of long-form gen art is like when it's done well, people really, really resonate around it. It's a different experience. We talked about that 2 weeks ago, rehashed some of that. But you kind of see, I think, a lot of things happening that feel very native to Web3 art. So their 6529's release, you know, maybe the aesthetics of the art don't resonate with everybody, but I think the collectability, the way it was done, the traits, all that were fantastic. So that was really cool to see the crowd react behind that. And then we see the Ether Rock stuff come up and some controversy where Sotheby's made a claim around the Ether Rock. I forget their exact words verbatim, but it was something along the lines of like, this is a really important like building block of, you know, Ethereum NFT culture. And a lot of people did not agree with that statement. I don't agree with it either. But then 6529 comes out with a tweet that basically says, why do you care what Sotheby's says? You know, you probably just care because you want TradFi or TradArt to come and buy our bags. But like, let's be real, they're probably not going to, and we don't need them to. We already are fine with crypto native people coming and buying the art that is crypto native art. And it calls into question, well, what institutions matter? You know, is it the Web3 institutions or is it places like Sotheby's and the MoMA, et cetera? And do we really need the TradFi people? So we'd love to hear your reaction to that question, Jared. And I would love for anybody listening to come on stage. I know we got a few artists here. would be particularly cool to hear an artist's take on it. But yeah, Jared, any thoughts on this question as to who should we really be impressing, or really any of that, Pebbles, Celebi Rock?
I'm going to have somewhat of a dodgy answer, but I think, you know, one of my favorite words in the space is the word "and." I think it's whatever has resonance with like, as an artist, I think it's whoever has resonance with you. And I think as a collector, it to me, it's about casting a wide net and being welcoming to everybody. Like, do we need the billionaire to hang art on their wall? No, I don't think we do, but it'd be nice if a couple of them like validate it. You know what I'm saying? Do we need, you know, a world that doesn't allow them in? Like, it doesn't feel very Web3 and inclusive to me. So, you know, my general perspective is I think that, you know, with 8NAP, I'm talking to a lot of artists, and I think that like some of these, you know, whether it's Sotheby's or other, you know, institutions, like there is a bit of validation that comes with it. And I think that, do you need them? No. Is it nice when, you know, everybody sees value in art and we don't delineate between this type or that type? Yeah, I think it's just a much better world when we can all sit back, love art, enjoy it, whether it's blockchain art, traditional art, or others. And look, when it comes to the rocks, I tend to agree with like 6529, which is like, who cares, right? If people want to collect around it, like, that's awesome. I think that that's, if you believe there's historical precedence and an importance in the ecosystem, like, good for you. Like, I've developed a thesis around squiggles specifically. It's why I've invested a substantial amount, you know, of my, I'll call it, art bags into squiggles, because I think that there's something about it, and it's the narrative that I've deployed, and it seems like there'll be some others that are investing around it. Seems to have a level of stickiness, but overall, like, my conviction in the art is not dependent on any large institution. But I would like for, you know, if a large institution comes and starts validating this as an art form, you know, I don't think it's the tipping point to craziness, but I do think it's you know, it's just another data point along the way. Like, if Sotheby's slings your stuff, does that mean you've made it? I don't think so. But, you know, at the end of the day, and this is a long rambling to say, I don't think this world has to be so binary where it's like they have to be here or they don't have to be here in order to have the validation. I think it's just it's a great world where we can all get along and enjoy art.
Yeah, and so I completely agree with everything you're saying. I think the question that 6529 is posing is, do we need the trad art world to survive as a Web3 world, right? Because I think what people were saying with the Sotheby's Rock was, this makes us look bad if this is what the trad art world is presented with as a, you know, example of what is valued in Web3 art. Then those trad art collectors will never come to Web3 art, and we need to make sure that the rock doesn't go on sale because it's gonna, you know, kill this Web3 art ecosystem. I think that's the sentiment that was out there.
Yeah, but in my opinion, that's like cherry picking, right? Because they've done Fidenzas, which is arguably one of the most coveted pieces of art. They sold the goose, right? Like there's. Like, I don't think you have to like every single thing that somebody or some institution puts up and propagates as definitively as art. Like, again, I've been in buying some of the Sotheby's 3AC, BVD, whatever, the collection. And, you know, and part of it, I remember the first one that they released, it was intermixed with a bunch of traditional art. And I can tell you, I think I shared the story. I haven't done it publicly, but I accidentally fat fingered $500,000 bid. Thank God somebody like outbid me. But like the piece of art, I wouldn't have paid $5,000 for, and yet somebody was paying $500,000 for it. And I use that as a art subjective. And I think that what the rock highlights is it's still a subjective thing, and there's no right reason. If it's what the free market says, in my opinion.
Totally, totally. And look, Sotheby's sells more things than what people might consider purely art, right? And I think in the same week, those Michael Jordan sneakers sold for like, what was it? You were probably following. It was like $7 to $10 million. I forget what it was.
Yeah, it was huge.
And that is an incredible amount of money for a collectible. I actually put the Aether Rock squarely in the collectible category rather than the art category. But I think, look, I agree with you. I don't think that people in the trad art world are going to just completely ignore Web3 art because there was a single piece of art that they didn't agree with, or collectible, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah,
So.
does it give you realms to joke on it a little bit? Sure, but I mean, at the end of the day, nothing's perfect. And what I like about it is it invokes a conversation, and then hopefully, individuals like us are able to speak to the broader marketplace and not just the Ether Rock.
Well, and here's the second part of the conversation. Something that 6529 said that I can't prove, but anecdotally, I think he's right, is that in most of these auctions, it's not even trad art people buying the Web3 art, right? And I think another example of this is Tonic. So the platform Tonic, I don't know about recent times, but I had spoken to some folks who went to some of their release parties, and their whole thing was, we will help get you in touch with trad art people. And I think they do, and they mingle, but most of the stuff sells out within like a minute online when it is released to mint, right? And I'm like, yeah, how many trad art people are like gassing up their MetaMask and buying this, right? And okay, fine, maybe they delegated someone to, but it just kind of strikes me that even though we have been sort of extending olive branches to trad art folks, the majority of the buying still seems to be coming from people who are Web3, let's call it Web3 native, for lack of a better term. And I again, I don't know about all the stuff that happens, right? But it just like 6529 ended up buying the goose. I just feel like he's right. Like, and the person who paid $69 million so that Beeple every days, I'm pretty sure they're a Web3 native person as well. So I'm just not really even sure. Like, are we just like trying to like bark up the wrong tree, trying to court trad art people to buying Web3 art, and they're just either not going to get it, or not see the value in it, or not get that same status boost, right? Like, if none of their friends know what it is or care, then like they don't get any props for holding a squiggle.
Yeah, I think that like it's just like anything else, right? I mean, I don't know about your story, but for me, I was
Oh, did we lose you? Oh, I can't hear you anymore. I know you mentioned the Bluetooth. And hopefully I'm not just talking over you. Okay. I think Jared may have gotten rugged here, which happens. I'm just gonna text him to see. Oh man, I wanted to hear what he had to say. Well, if there's anyone in the crowd who has any thoughts on this and is at liberty to speak, I would love to hear that.
Can you guys hear me?
Now I
You guys
can.
hear me?
Now I can.
Ah, no. Where did I leave off? Or did you hear me at all?
I didn't hear you. You said I think, and I think you were like about to get into it, and then it cut out.
Damn, I was on my grandstand and I completely lost my flow. I will say, for anybody who wants to participate in the conversation, please feel free to come up. We'd love to have you. But I think that to me. Oh, what I was gonna say is, I've run through the airports with my SquiggleDAO t-shirts, my Hyper Squiggle hat, and me, I travel a lot. Not one person in probably a dozen or two dozen trips have ever asked what that is. Like, and again, it's not that I need the attention. To me, this is just a data point for I'm encountering thousands of people on a regular basis through my travels. And the curiosity hasn't quite hit there for somebody to even say, like, what is that? It's not even like nice squiggle, bro. Like, what is that? And I think that that's indicative of it's early. And then when things are early, like, there's a lot of education pertaining to it. My core fundamental thesis, which is why I think a lot of this art is going to digitally native individuals, is digitally verifiable and authentic pieces on the blockchain are just like invaluable from a verifiable perspective. And that to me is this core thesis that no matter who's buying it, it just becomes so much more viscerally like indicative of like, this is still the right mode for collecting. I mean, I watched a documentary about like forgeries that were being done through a reputable gallery in New York and just how I think they like netted something like $80 million in sales off of this fraudulent art. Like, think about how many people in the quote unquote traditional art scene have gotten fleeced because of that and feel cheated by it. That's now all out the window and instantaneously not only verifiable, but transferable, you know, through smart contracts. And that gives me conviction, amongst a lot of other things. But I'll hop down off of my soapbox while Derek's here. And congrats on the most recent sale, my man. It's a beautiful piece of artwork. I'm proud of you, and also being a black and white Ansel Adams photography fan, really proud to see your art transitioning into that monochromatic black and white realm. So congrats, man. That's beautiful.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you for bringing me up. I know that it's a very controversial conversation, and also thank you for the congratulations. It's been such a day just taking it all in and celebrating here at home. And it's also really nice to see that there are a lot of collectors in the space who, because when I started, I remember that a lot of them recognized me more for my like Blade Runner-y, like Cine Noir kind of style. And now Black and White has brought a lot of people that I didn't expect that liked my work. So it's really nice to see how there's this more traditional side to it. But I'll stop with that. It's really interesting to see how people reacted with The Rock or the Ether Rock and with the Sotheby's sale, because I do believe that there are two very polarized sides, right? One is we are very purist and we are protective of Web3 and art. And obviously we want everything to remain as transparent as possible because we are all making this grow, right? We are all here to see everybody thrive and push the ecosystem forward, and seeing sometimes like things like this, like Sotheby's closing a deal off chain and starting to do like sketchy stuff, it feels unnecessary. I understand that auction houses have their ways and sometimes they do this kind of things, but I also believe that they owe a certain amount of respect to the space. And if you're entering here and you want people to support you, you also have to abide by the rules of the space. And one of them is things stay on chain and things are public, right? On the other side, something that I've also noticed a lot is, especially on the art side, obviously, people are still not used to realizing that this is a business for some people. Like, yeah, we love art. Yes, we love that people are very passionate about it, but an auction house is an auction house. And as you guys were saying, like, Sotheby's doesn't only sell art. Like, they sell cars, they sell whiskey, they sell everything that can make them money, they will sell it. So yeah, like, people will complain that it's 400 or whatever ETH for The Rock or whatever you want, but in the end, it's really important to remain objective and realize that this is a business and they have a business to run. And yeah, if The Rock is gonna make the money, they're gonna sell The Rock. If a sheet of paper is going to make the money, they will sell the sheet of paper. Same goes for a Van Gogh. If a Van Gogh sells, they're obviously going to have it. So it's just really interesting how to see this world just like collide against each other and all this crazy takes.
Yeah, I love that. And I think it's really, you know, what I'm when you take a step back, what I'm most excited about is the discussion that's invoked as a result of such a polarizing topic. And your point is 100% valid. Like, this is a business, but, you know, like, what else can we be doing that will allow for you know, the overall growth of this marketplace. That's kind of where I get back to. And, you know, and I think Aston's right. Like, do we need trad art? I don't know. Like, I really don't know. And I don't think it's binary of like yes or no.
I think it's binary. I think the answer is no. But I'll let you go, Derek.
Oh, really?
I kind of agree with Aston here. With I see a lot of parallels, for example, with digital photography and film photography here, where we don't really need to compare each other because we're two completely different animals. I don't know if you say it that way in English, and in Spanish we say like different animals, but constantly comparing and constantly like saying like, oh, digital world has to live in the traditional art world, I don't think it's necessary. I believe that
we don't have to be isolationists, I guess is my point, where it doesn't, like, can it exist in a purely digital world? But yeah, but isn't art supposed to be shared?
It's not about being isolationist, man. It's about like bending over backwards and like, you know, putting out your begging pail to the trad art world. I think that's the problem. It's not so much like it's bending the Web3 culture that made Web3 art what it is, because you're like, well, we need the trad art people, so we're going to start sacrificing our values because we need them. That is what I do not think is necessary at all. And I think that's kind of like the crux of the issue. No one in Web3 is saying we don't want trad art people. Of course we want them. We want everybody. Like, that's it's an inclusive art system. That's like how it started, you know? So I hear what you're saying, and I agree with you. I think it's more about like, you know, I think what's happened is that this market grew extremely, extremely fast. Okay. And any young, fast growing market is going to have crazy volatility. And just go look at the Bitcoin chart from the early days. Like, that's what's happening in Web3 art effectively, or at least those kind of dynamics. And there's a lot of people who are losing hope and are feeling like, well, either what I collected is never going to be worth anything, or artists being like, I'm never going to be able to make a living doing this. I thought I could, like, that dream is over. And in that, they are searching for lifelines, and trad art seems like a really good lifeline. And I think that, like, of course, like, it's definitely rough days in a lot of ways right now, or certainly relative to what it was a couple of years ago. But I think, like, a little perspective, like, what about compared to 5 years ago? Like, what the amount of activity, the amount of money, the amount of like art is a dream compared to like 5 years ago in this space, where there was like basically nothing, right? So that's one thing. I think it's the comparison point, but it's also like, you know, do we need them to save us? Let me ask you that, Jared. Do you think we need trad art to save us? That, I think, is the question.
Yeah, so I will say I am 100% aligned with what you said about, like, we don't need to have bended knee to them. I think that, to me, it's synergistic. Like, one should lift up the other. Like, I think Sotheby's needs digital art just as much as, like, digital art could benefit from exposure from Sotheby's. I will say, like, do we have to be bended knee? No. But what was your question? Apologies.
No, just that. Like, do we need them to save us?
But yeah, like, I don't think we need them to save us. I also think that a lot
It's funny because this reminds me a little bit of a fight that I had with someone coming from the traditional art world into the space. He was complaining about the mimetic numbers and all the funny things that we have over here, and saying that they were childish. And I remember that I DM'd him and I was like, take the time to understand this space, because a lot of the things that people, when they enter, they see them as childish, or they see them as nonsense, as part of our culture. And I do believe that the same thing applies to Sotheby's in this case, or any Web2 or traditional art world company that enters. If you are entering the space, which has been growing, which has been nurtured by all of us, take the time to understand our culture, take the time to understand our ethos, and respect it, because we've all taken the time to grow this, and there is a reason for everything. If Sotheby's wants to be here, I do believe that, as I said, they owe a little bit of respect to all of us, and just doing the transactions in the same way that everybody does. Like, it's nothing from another world.
I will say, of the traditional auction houses, I think Sotheby's has done one of the better approaches to it. I mean, if you think about it, they had the Starry Night, the 3AC collection, and they could have just dumped Fidenzas into the market and completely floored a bunch of stuff. I get that it wasn't financially in their best interest, but I really do think that, again, they served to profit, but they did a great job, in my opinion, of like allowing each piece of art to have its moment and to honor it as not only part of the collection, but the overall Web3 space.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, Derek, I hear what you're saying. I think that it's a question of how short-term versus long-term focused Sotheby's is doing, is being, right? Because I think you're specifically referring to the Ether Rock sale being private. We don't know what it's going to sell for. You know, at some point, it's probably going to get transferred to some anonymous wallet. You probably don't even know who's going to buy it. And my guess is they think they'll be able to fetch a higher price in doing this, right? I mean, they're a business and they're an auction house. Like, that is literally the point. So probably there's some buyer or buyers who like didn't want it on chain and they're like, fine, like we'll do it that way because we'll get a better price. I don't know if that's true, but I'm guessing that's why they are doing this. Now,
but how is that any different than if somebody does like an OTC deal?
It's not. It's not any different. So that was like one point is I don't know if you can ever really stop this, right? There's tons of, I don't know how many, but there's certainly.
I would argue that this is an institution.
What is? Sotheby's?
It's not like two private individuals are just making a trade. It's an auction house.
So you're saying the auction house.
Do they have an obligation to make it public?
I believe so.
But like, okay, Derek, let's say, all right, you crush it as an artist, you know, you're still making your art, but you're like, man, I want to create like.
I mean, if you are becoming such a big figure in the space, if you are, I don't know.
Like, well, let me ask you. I'm gonna ask you a question. Okay, you.
I love Web3, honestly, and maybe I'm a little bit too romantic about it. But
well, I think
I do believe that if you are entering the space and. We all have this obligation to make it grow. And when things are taken to be too personal or too private, when you are at a degree as Sotheby's is, it just is weird.
Okay, you know? Derek, let me ask you a question. Okay.
Also something that's very important to realize is we are all building the future of how Web3 is going to behave, what the rules are going to be. And the more things that are allowed to happen, maybe right now it doesn't have a big impact, but later on this will be a good way for other people to keep on doing it. You know, like maybe Sotheby's did it now and other institutions enter the space and we'll be like, yo, if they did it, I'll do it. And I don't know. Sometimes the space forgets things really fast. And I do believe that everything that happens here writes a chapter in the history of Web3. So allowing this kind of things to happen only amplifies them to happen in the future.
So a couple of thoughts here, Derek. I don't think this is a Web2 thing. I think this is a human thing. Right. I think like if Sotheby's thinks they can make 10 times as much money doing this private, they'll do it. I think a Web3 auction house, if they felt like they could make 10 times the money doing it privately, then they would. I think the artist selling the work, like if you could sell your work for $1 million on chain, but $50 million off chain, would you sell it off chain? Right. I'm using an extreme example, but like at the extremes, you can kind of see what the principle is. And I think that if you really want to break this behavior, you have to give people a really, really compelling reason to sell it on chain. Like there has to be an incentive to do it. Otherwise, it's just not going to happen. Well, I mean, people follow their incentives, Web3 or not.
Let's talk about this. Larva Labs just sold 2 autoglyphs to a big collector in the, it wasn't public what they sold. Is that, I'm just trying to understand this. Like, is that the same?
You know, I think I think it kind of is the same. This is my point. Like OTC deals, private deals have been going on for a while. I mean, you know this, Jared, like especially at the higher end of the art side, like a lot of these deals don't show up on chain. Nobody knows how much was paid for it. And this behavior is so common in Web3. I just feel like it's a human thing. And I think especially at the higher ends, people are just not going to want to know how much money they spent. People are not going to want other people to know.
I will say I respect what Derek's saying, because I think that at least what I'm hearing is, as a steward of Web3 and carrying the torch, I mean, you and I have had enough conversations, not in public spaces. I'm obviously, I shouldn't say obviously, but I am a holder of one of your one-on-ones in multiple editions. Like, I bought your art because I believe in you as a person. And part of what I love about you is your passion for art specifically, but art for art within this space. So I think that, you know, what I'm hearing is that, like, being a good steward of the space, you know, and an advocate to doing that, we should all do our part and do it in an honorable fashion, which I think, you know, if we all look at our actions, we could all fine tune a little bit. And I think that, you know, to some degree, like, Sotheby's does have a very public, you know, part within the ecosystem, whether we like it or not. And being a good steward of the spot, I think we all have to do our part.
Yeah, and look, I also agree with Derek. I think things would be better if there was more transparency in these sales, right? I am just making my observation that, practically speaking, I think the only way to do that is going to be if there is a strong incentive for people to show how much they spent. Right. And right now, the stronger incentive is to hide how much you spent, especially kind of at the higher ends, which is why people do it. I mean, like, I think you mentioned it, Jared, but a couple weeks ago, there were two autoglyphs that were moved over the counter. Like, I don't know how much those were sold for. Right. But like, it happened. So, yeah, I mean, I do think it would be, you know, maybe there will be an institution that comes along that decides, hey, we're going to go with the principle of transparency because that is like a value of Web3 art. And maybe that will really lead to them getting more deal flow, like being able to auction off more works. And, you know, people will choose them because they uphold that culture.
What I will say about the OTC thing is, to me, it's about honoring like the original intent of the blockchain, and to me it's about royalties. And this is gonna sound weird coming since I am a platform, maybe, but like really honoring royalties for artists first. I know the autoglyphs don't have royalties associated with it because it's Larva Labs, but I do believe that with these OTC deals, like the artist royalties should be honored. I think that that's just it's a social contract, but more than that, it's actually written into the code. So those that are going around it, you know, is everybody perfect? Probably not. But, you know, I think that that's part of the culture that is, you know, should definitely be upheld. And that's part of the sustainability of the space and allowing artists to, you know, to benefit from a transaction, which was, you know, the intent was clearly, I'll call it, indicated in the blockchain.
Yeah, totally. That's like a whole nother topic that I feel like we could do a whole spaces on, because I agree with you, but similarly, I feel like people are just not going to do it out of nature, right? Or out of this like concept of holding up the culture. I just don't think you can rely on that.
But see, this is what I was trying to say. Like, the problem when it is off chain, it leaves so many things in the air. We don't know if they were intending or if they even did pay the royalties or not. We don't know anything about it. So hiding all this information, even if they did, you know, like they could have paid it and everything would be okay. But just the fact that it was off chain already makes everything weird. It reminds me of the raffle that happened with AvantArt. I don't remember how long ago. I think it was with a raffle from ACK that everybody was like, yo, how did you raffle it? How did you decide the randomization of things? And because it didn't feel random at all. And it's that kind of information that, because it's so hidden and there's no transparency, nobody understands and they can do whatever the fuck they want. And it doesn't work that way. Because that's what Web3 and I think crypto tries to do. Like, we are public, we are transparent. And yeah, maybe you don't want people to know how much you're spending, but then don't buy it over here, you know? Like, maybe that's just me, but if the way that this works is by a public blockchain, you know that the information is going to become public.
I think that's also an interesting topic, because we can talk about how we then vote with our dollars as a, or ETH or whatever native currency, with our transactions, right? Like, we think that the raffling was unfair. We don't, you know, support that organization. If you're an artist and you don't drop art there, I think that that's a, I think the problem is like this move, part of the problem is the space moves so fast that, you know, you're making decisions, you know, in a flash, and on a long enough timeline, a lot of people's true incentives are going to show themselves. And on a long enough timeline, I think the cream rises to the top. And I mean, you're very intentional, Derek, with your, with who, you know, your collectors are. And I admire that. And I'm honored to be on that list. And I think that that's one approach. And I think that that's, you know, how you're deciding to curate your future as an artist. And I think that that's what's going to be interesting about this space is, you know, we're going to see how, again, on a long enough timeline, a lot of these different approaches are going to be either embraced or pushed away.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, Jared. I mean, I actually totally agree with you, Derek, on the Avante art thing. I thought that was very shady. But the problem is, like, it didn't matter, right? You still have 10 other artists lined up. Matt Delorier just released with them. You know, I think Mapan released with them afterwards. Those all sold out. Like, you know, we can talk about our principles all we want, but if we're not acting them, right, if people are still releasing there, if people are still selling there, then do you really have that principle, right? And I think on a long enough timeline, that will emerge, right? I'm sure of it. But in the short term, it, you know, I think people are willing to overlook it for probably a number of reasons. Sorry, go ahead, Jared.
I was going to say, I do things a little bit different at 8NAP, where I don't have contracts. I want people to release art because it's a place that they take pride in releasing in. But I'll say, at least for the two artists that you mentioned, like, we don't know like what sort of like obligations they had. So I don't want to like judge that, but I still go back to like on a long enough timeline, like, was it the right thing to do? Who knows? Like, can somebody come back from maybe a misstep? I think that we got to give people graces too, right? Like, that's one of the things that I'm loving about this space. Dude, we opened it up with like the Moonbirds discussion, right? Like, which is, you know, now that it's at Yuga, there's going to be a lot of grace given to the community, because partially bags, but partially, right? Like, we all want to see the space rise up, and whether you like to say it or not, like, Yuga is well funded, and if they can, you know, I'll call it grow the community and expand the collectorship in a constructive fashion, like, dude, I'm all for it.
Yeah, and look, you make a good point. It's if it does seem like Avante, at least the way they tweeted in their subsequent releases, they were like, okay, we see what happened and we are going to switch it up now. So they at least, you could say they adopted the Web3 culture. At least it seems like it so far. I haven't dug into it too deeply. So I agree with that as well. But yeah, I mean, I just think it's interesting, right? Because like, I think if you have these values of transparency, openness, inclusiveness, then it allows for a much, much bigger art market. And that's why I think this art market is going to be big. Like, I'm telling you, man, I'm convinced. I know people might think I'm crazy, but I'm convinced within, I'm going to say 30 years, which is a long time, maybe 20 years, the most important museums will be Web3 museums. Like, it won't be trying to get into MoMA. It'll be trying to get into some like Web3 institution, because I think Web3 art, like the Web3 art world, is going to be like 10 to 100 times bigger than the traditional art world. And it's, I'm saying this because you look at how many more people could participate versus how many people are able to participate in the trad art world. And it's orders of magnitude more.
I also look at it as like the barriers to entry, right? Like to be able to hop on a plane, go to Paris to see the Mona Lisa or to Florence to see the David. Like that takes like not only real time commitments, but real resources. Not a lot of people have that luxury. And I think being able to, you know, have a digital art gallery, museum, whatever you want to call it, it just, the accessibility, I mean, it sounds weird to say this out loud, but this is like the shit that I think about very often, is like how many people would be motivated and grow into, you know, being top artists if they had access to being in Florence, you know, during the Renaissance era. Like, is there another Leonardo out there that wasn't discovered because they didn't have access to or means to it? And I think that what's intriguing to me is that this, you know, inherently digitally native world is going to have I truly believe this. I can't even wrap my mind around it, but I think we'll have to supplement what you're saying, it will have a far greater impact than we can even fathom at this point, because, you know, one of my core theses here is humans are emotional people, and art is something that's viscerally emotional. And when you get that combination together, it just creates a lot of magic.
I'm going to jump on this one because what you just said is really interesting. I think I see a lot of parallels between crypto and art and the future of digital art in the rest of our daily lives, right? The role that, for me, art plays in crypto is humanizing crypto. When we are on our timeline and we're scrolling and we see artworks just being tweeted, or we see artists commenting or whatever, I feel like crypto stops being about numbers and bags and it does become more human. And in the near future, I do believe that, well, my thesis is obviously immersive mediums are going to break into the mainstream, and we're going to be used to wearing VR, extended reality, AR, and we're going to be constantly immersed in a digital world. It's not going to be a decision of I want to do it or not. It's just going to be normal. It's like us using a phone right now. When that happens, digital assets in general will appreciate, because it's only natural, right? Because it's what you're going to be consuming inside the digital world. But then again, art will be the thing that will humanize that digital side. Because as much as we have digital assets, we also have this niche where we have artwork, where we have something that is more abstract, that appeals to the more human side. So it makes total sense with what you were saying, Jared.
Yeah, I think the playbook is already written for somebody who's willing to take the time and look at it. Like, whether it's Call of Duty or skins in Fortnite, like, there's something about the digital world that is becoming inherently native to future generations. And as you alluded to with AR, VR, it's a no-brainer. I mean, I always go back to Derek Edwards' paper that was, like, so brilliantly penned paper. It's a Medium article, but where he talks about the Lindy effect, and like things that have historically stored value have a tendency to store value, you know, in the foreseeable future. And to me, art has been that. And I think that when you pair something beautiful with emotions, it's undefeated on a long enough timeline. I mean, look, the other thing about this, you know, I'm gonna get a little bit, you know, personal, but it's part of the ethos around 8NAP is like discovery of and support of artists. Like, I absolutely have an emotional connection to all of the artists that we support, and it's truly because I believe in not only the art, but the individual behind it, and just the sheer opportunity that I think Web3 should be able to afford to not only collectors, but to artists. Like, you know, Derek, you have a phenomenal story. And anybody who hasn't heard about it, I'm not going to make this all about you, but like, Punkcast did a really amazing hour and a half long interview that you're on it, and you shared your story. Like, being able to be a part of somebody's journey, whether a collector, platform, or other, like, these are the things that just give me so much conviction about the Web3 space, and it motivates me every single day, man. I'm truly grateful, and I believe that we're all creating something that's gonna really transcend even our time here on Earth.
Oh, I agree with you. I mean, it is wonderful being able to connect with people and their stories and humanize it all. And I actually wanted to ask you, Derek, you used that word a couple times about art humanizing the digital world. And I'm just curious, like, what does that mean for you? Or if you could elaborate on that word humanize, like, what change, what's like the before and after that you've noticed when art becomes introduced?
So I used to study design and digital media, which it was generative art, motion graphics, cinema, electronics, everything, right? And I was really blessed to have a headmaster that was an artist, is an artist, like a proper artist. And he is very poetic and romantic and loves and appreciates the more abstract side of art. So in a career that was so digital, he would always talk about the poetry of technology and how could you bring this more human side or humanize technology. Because we hear technology and the first thing that we hear and that we think is robots, computers, coding and stuff like that, which is something that feels completely foreign to us, right? So how do we bring this other aspect that's organic, emotional, empathetic to something that's so cold? That's where I come in by saying art humanizes crypto, because we artists, we're vulnerable, we are empathetic, we talk about our real life, our experiences. We show how crypto can have an impact in our artistry, in our journey. So when I see, I don't know, like even the memes, you know, like 6529 doing that kind of stuff, incorporating artistic elements into such a trader culture, because a lot of my friends used to be in crypto back in the day, and I would see what they were doing, and it was like constantly charts and constantly like updating and information and stuff. Like it was very hard data. And I believe that seeing art combined with data brings this more human element to it. It opens new discussions. It opens spaces like this one right now. This space wouldn't be happening if art wasn't in crypto, right? We are able to discuss really interesting conversations that are not about chasing bags or the latest shitcoin or the latest whatever. This is about art. And there are a lot of people that would otherwise not even be entering the space. So that's where I'm just like, I wouldn't have entered crypto if it weren't for art, just to start with it. Like, I don't understand crypto. I'm not a finance guy. I'm not into economics and all that kind of stuff. I am a geek. I love computers. I love what crypto will be in the future and is right now. I heard about it 10 years ago. I was stupid enough not to buy it. But that is what I'm trying to say. Like, the power that art has to appeal to this other segment of people is really important, because it does bring people that have good hearts, that have good intentions into the space. And I feel like that spreads to the rest of the crypto space. I love to see, for example, something that excites me a lot is, for example, when traders start taking a chance in art and start appreciating it. Like, I know that, for example, something that was very risky with Moonbirds was when they forced people to like art, right? That was a really, really tough decision. And I don't know if it was a right or the wrong one, but I do know that down the road, a lot of people who were not into art started to learn about it and started to appreciate it in another way, other than just like trying to flip and going for speculation and stuff. So seeing a lot of new people just researching, approaching artists, talking with them, learning about their journey, that's been one of the best things that I've experienced over here.
No, that's awesome. Thank you for sharing that and explaining it. And as you were talking about it, it just made me think about how, you know, what is like the, not that this is the point, but what is the function that art serves in our society? And when you talk about humanizing it, I realize that when you see art that makes you feel something, it's communication, right? It's like the artist is communicating something to you without words, and you can get that feeling that they were often having. And it also communicates sometimes the feeling of the whole culture, right? I mean, even though, like you were talking about the traditional art collectors and how crypto, you know, there's always 420 or 69, right? And then you're like, well, that's part of the culture. And then you see Beeples. I don't even know how many like dicks I've seen him make in his everydays, like being in Web3, at least 10, right? It's just like, that's just kind of like part of the culture and why it's funny, and even the 6529 meme. So that was a great explanation. I appreciate that. That really kind of opened up the way I think about it.
There's a very short anecdote that just happened a little while ago. Like, one of them is Jared. I don't know if you know, but something that happened was when we spoke about making his one of one, he told me his story about how he met his wife. And he asked me if his piece could have something to do with that. And as an artist, being able to portray that kind of memories in a piece, and that tying up with blockchain and making it a forever memory. See, that's the kind of power that I see art bringing to the space. I have another collector who's same thing. Like, his wife comes from Japan. Part of her family lives in the north. And he saw that I was traveling around there. And he told me, like, can you please make a piece out of that? Because I want to gift it to her. It's going to be her first piece. So, and they're based in the other side of the world. They would have never gotten to know me if it weren't for Web3. So seeing also how Web3 is able to fade all these limitations of distance, communication, is where I think things really become powerful, where if you see, like, you as a collector, you can follow and support an artist during their journey. It's not only about buying the piece, but all the things that will happen later on. Jared bought his piece from me, like, what, 4 or 5 months ago, and look, like, we speak nearly every single day. And we're friends. It's not even as a collector. Like, it creates bonds. It creates families. And if you also think of it as a network, when you buy art, you're buying something that's more intimate to you. And you're buying something that truly resonates with you. So knowing what other people resonate with that very intimate side of you is also very strong. Because then you know who you can connect with in the space and who you will likely have a deeper connection with.
Yeah, I mean, we're picking our communities now as we speak, right? We vote with our art, with our dollars, with our ETH. I do want to recognize, apologies if I mispronounce it, but Core came up as a speaker. So if there is something you wanted to share, please feel free to interject. Want to be inclusive of everybody up here and give you a little bit of flowers for having the courage to come up. We love seeing some new faces. But Derek is, like you said, this is purely emotional. Like, I love sharing my story with you. And it's, you know, it was never a financial play when I collected the one-on-one. It was purely because there's a piece that was so emotionally resonant. Like, I couldn't imagine not having it. And I'll share the stories. It's somewhat in a tweet, but I've collected
I'm collecting a collection around my wife that she doesn't even know I'm collecting. So like eventually I'll be able to share with her an entire collection one day is my hope.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that, Jared. And Cor, please go ahead. Thanks for coming up.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I was just listening for quite some time to you all speak, and you all sound very intelligent and educated on the art space, more specifically of NFTs. And I'm a little new here, so I'm just trying to get involved with the people that sound like they know what they're talking about and people that are like-minded, and you all seem very like-minded. So I'm here to connect. I'm here to contribute to a conversation. And yeah, just support the community and hopefully get something. But yeah, thank you guys for being very welcoming. I do appreciate the inclusivity. But yeah.
I don't mean to be rude, but I just came home to a huge water leak in my house. So I unfortunately have to leave. But thank you, everybody.
No worries, Jared. Good luck with that. And Cor, no, for sure. I appreciate you coming up. I think most people would be happy to help. A lot of people have DMs open. I know there's a ton of artist communities. So I think that, you know, just reach out to folks and you'll find what you're looking for. It will take a little bit of time to get up to speed on the way things work in the Web3 side, just as anywhere. You know, when you're new to a new system, a new culture, ecosystem, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, people will be happy to help you. And I too actually have to run, but I really appreciate you coming up, Derek, and I appreciate everybody listening. We'll be doing this again next Friday. Actually going to have a guest who's got a release coming out, Clown Vamp. So we'll be chatting about that as part of it. But also talk about anything else interesting going on as well. But just appreciate you all. Hope you have a wonderful Friday evening or Saturday morning, depending on where you're at. And yeah, we'll talk to you all next week. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for tuning into Collector's Corner. We really appreciate you taking the time to listen. If you like this episode and want to help us out, please subscribe and leave us a review on your podcasting platform of choice, like Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and follow us on YouTube. Please also follow us on Twitter for announcements as we expand to other social and content platforms. Our Twitter handle is @collectors_XYZ. We'd also love to hear any feedback you have, so please comment or reach out. We're always striving to be more useful and get better so we can help you in your collecting journey. The Collector's Corner team and their guests are not registered investment advisors. All views expressed on this podcast are personal opinions and are not specific inducements to make particular investments or investment strategies and should not be relied upon for investment decisions. This show is solely for informational and entertainment purposes only. Before making any financial decisions, please consult a professional.